Welcome to The Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
Welcome to The Urban Complex. All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Papa, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University or Amazon Web Services. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for any decisions. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no further relationship with the podcast purposes than the sponsors unless separately created with another entity. Enjoy The Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
Hey, Dom, here we are again. What's top of mind for you?
I think let's be conscious about not talking about the Phoenix Suns and the way they played last Sunday. Just heartbreaking. So I'm going to consciously not bring that up. But it's another great day. It's getting hot in Arizona. I think it's a 106 on Sunday. So, you know, all good stuff. How about you, man?
Yeah, you know, it's like one of the worst games I think I've ever seen. So for me, it's been a lot of change, move. You see that I don't have the fish in the background. And it's a new house. So I got to kind of figure out, you know, it's very stark white walls. I got to figure out.
Yeah, new places, right? Did you get that? Did you get that fish over there? I'm glad you
did. You didn't have dreams about moving it, huh? Yeah. It's all set up.
That's awesome. Well, you know, I know the Suns unfortunately lost to Dallas. And I think our guest is from another city in Texas. Tell me about who we have on this week.
Yes, so we have Kendra Ketchum. She's with UT San Antonio. And I know one of our sponsors worldwide, David Stevens, made an intro. I'm excited to hear what she has to say. She's got a great reputation. So,
yeah. I love, you know, lived in San Antonio for a little bit, played soccer down there. So excited to see how the university is playing a role in shaping the city. Should we bring her on?
Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
Hi, Kendra. Please let Dom and I give you a warm welcome to our podcast, The Urban Complex. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's exciting.
No problem. Well, we try to get our audience to know our guests pretty quick. So we just found it's best to start with some information about you. What do you want the audience to know about yourself as a person, your background? And, you know, we'll get to your role at UT San Antonio soon. So
Perfect. So a little bit about me. Spent my first early years. I left high school in a small Weatherford, Texas town and joined the Navy and traveled across the world. And so I spent about almost 10 and a half years in the Navy and took tours in Spain. And I was in Desert Storm. So a lot of wartime activity that we were doing. And I was in the medical field. And so probably around the early 1996 timeframe, we were doing a lot of traveling and trying to understand patients that were in Italy and not have to travel from Spain to Italy to see them. And so we started looking at IP networks and telemedicine and how we could actually institute some type of telemedicine protocol to be able to see patients remotely. And I think that kicked off my technology, mindset. I started very quickly. I was really interested in some of the CPT coding that we were doing in healthcare at the time. And it was all reliant upon systems and those integration of those systems to get some meaningful, you know, information out of them. So that was an exciting time, but I did pivot out of directly out of the Navy and into higher education. And so for the last 26 years, I've been only in higher ed. And I went from a small private school in Ohio to a large state in Ohio as a Bowling Green State University. And solving just problems with operationalizing technology to really solve problems. And it was just a new mindset. I think at the time, DevOps, all of that stuff started kind of coming out. And, you know, it was my passion lies in learning and providing opportunities for people who might not have an opportunity. I didn't go straight into to college out of high school. You know, I joined the military. My path is very non-traditional. And so I lay down my weight in that area because the more people that we can get into and they learn and they grow and they get, you know, skills and things that can go out to the local communities that they live in and they can contribute positively, right? And so at the end of the day, I don't have a single IT book on my bookshelf. It's
all, I was looking.
Yeah, it's all people books. It's about relationships. It's about, you know, sharing ideation. It's about, you know, being a leader. And I think what I recognized very quickly and why I stayed in higher ed was that there was just this operational mindset of just get everything done, but there was not this leadership mindset, right? Okay. Tie it all together. Look at the bigger picture. What's the value that we're bringing? How can we partner with, you know, the local city and state and local government? Things like that, that can offer opportunities for our students. And so that's where my passion is. And I left, I was up at the University of North Texas system up in Denton. And I was there for a few years, did some transformational things there. And the biggest transformational thing I thought it was interesting in this time and era is laying down a really thoughtful data warehouse. And it turned more into decision science. It's not about the tech and the tools. It's about the decisions that leaders are making with the information that we're able to get together for them. So that is where I was like, oh, this is interesting. It's a problem and we can solve it in higher ed.
Yeah, so it's a great background and great context. Is there anything you want the audience to know about UT San Antonio or San Antonio as a city or the role of VP technology as context before we dig into some specific?
Absolutely. I'll be very brief on the context there for the role. They had a CIO and they didn't. The CIO reported through an academic unit, the provost office, and the academic portfolio really got all of the attention. But we also understand there's a business component to higher education that allows us to use meaningful data and systems to actually provide good resources back, capacity planning, all of those types of things, you know, our financial management, all of those things are lie in the business. And so they moved and made a new role. It's an inaugural role. And so they created this vice president for information management and technology here at UTSA. And when I came down here, it was exciting. Number one, San Antonio is the seventh largest city in the U.S. I did not know that. And I'm from Texas. So it was kind of interesting when I learned that. But and there's it's a large geographic area. And if you were to ask me, you know, at the time, did I realize about, you know, really, truly evident the digital divide is you come down here and you start to see it very quickly between here and the Rio Grande Valley, right? The digital divide is real. People don't even have cell phones. So, you know, things of which we're used to, they don't. And then I'll tell you, I was attracted to this role. It's a Hispanic serving institution. And they did not have their R1 status when I joined the team, but after we, you know, worked very closely with research and all of the academic units to provide, you know, all of the things we needed to do to get to that R1 space, we were there within 3 years. And so now we're in HSI, R1, you know, we're looking at NRF, and all of these things matter because we get attention when our graduates can get through these programs and go out and really do game-changing things in industry, right? Sure. And so, yeah, that's how I ended up down here. I got recruited, came down, met the president, Dr. Taylor Amy, and I'm like, I want to work for this man. So it was, we really did. The energy is what we need in our to be effective change agents, right? And bring in change and change the culture and the systems and all of that stuff really takes a leader, not necessarily a techie, right? But I got my technical chops. I did have to come up through the ranks, you know? So I think that's the difference is that I was an engineer. I asked why a lot. And I think that's where, you know, coming up here, we could really change this organization and just make our students' trajectory just invaluable. So that's a little bit about why I came down and what I love about San Antonio. I love San Antonio. I lived in Spain for 4 years while I was in the military, and the culture and the family, like familia, it resonates with me. So I was excited to join this family.
That's awesome. That's awesome, Kendra. This is going to be great. Well, congrats on your recent success, and your background's phenomenal. I think your viewpoints are phenomenal. This is going to be a wonderful conversation. I'm really excited to have you on. So, the podcast itself is around smarter cities, for a stronger tomorrow. And as you just mentioned, the universities play such an integral role in the cities. And so can you talk to us a little bit about your view of smart cities? What are they to you, especially with your view and the role you're in? What's working, what's not working? Talk to us just a little bit about smart cities to you.
Okay. So my philosophy on smart cities is they're connected. They're sharing information. They're ideating and solving problems with a shared ecosystem of data. Smart cities are extremely important. It's connecting all of those data points together. It's leveraging the big players in that city to come forward in a research and ideation way to solve those real world problems. And for example, when I arrived, I found that San Antonio, they weren't necessarily sharing data with some of the large corporate entities. And why I think that's relevant is, let's say there's traffic accidents and you're trying to reduce that risk and find out why. You're going to need data from the lamps. You're going to need data from the light. You're going to need data from the buses. You're going to need all of these data. And, VIA might have their own data set and requirements around it. And, these groups over here might, and none of that shared together can't solve the problem. And instead it becomes very siloed, right? But if you take your energy, you take your transportation and you merge them in a way together where we share data for meaningful insights and we try to solve problems together, like lean into that, right? And so that's how I envision a smart city operating. Having lights that go off when there's no, reducing waste and risk, those types of things matter. IoT is huge. Why not partner with your university research, right? And so that is where we stuck our arms out and bridged across the gap to say, listen, we can create a data sharing agreement with you and the city and all of these partners and VIA and the San Antonio Water Authority, like all of these groups. And under the guise of research, we can get some problems solved. And so I foresee, when you're in it and you've got a higher education institution, especially when they're, HSI solving some of the very problems of your city, lean into it and utilize their research opportunities in that and the funding that comes in with that to solve those problems. So that's what I think we are. We're stewards of solving those problems. And I tell my researchers, I want to reduce the time to science for you. That means on the back end, if we have the technical tools and all the architectures and ecosystems and, the widgets in place, they shouldn't have to think of that. And that goes all the way down to instrumentation. So use IoT, research it, go and cybersecurity. UTSA is really known for their cyber prowess. And so I look at, how can we even ensure we have smart, secure city, right? Mm-hmm. So it's even talking deeper. So I think it's an important, extremely important initiative. And some of the work that they're doing to solve these problems. And I love the fact that we've partnered and, our research partners and then obviously the CIO, we get together, we talk about these problems. When I arrived, Craig set up a breakfast and they do this every Friday. Everybody gets together and all these leaders, thought leaders get together and we're like, hey, what about this? And have you seen this problem? How can we solve it? And 9 times out of 10, it's going to be a research project that comes out of that.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's huge. And I love that idea of leaning in because you're exactly right. I mean, especially when it comes to smart cities, if you're not fully committed, if you're not leaning in, if you're not collaborating, breaking down those silos, building up those partnerships, you're never going to be successful. And so often, as we can tell from your leadership, it's the university is really the main catalyst that can really get people moving within the city. So absolutely love that perspective. So let's kind of shift from the city a little bit more to focus now on the University of Texas, San Antonio. Talk to us about how you and your organization really look at innovation within the university, but also within the broader ecosystem.
I love that question. And why that is, why it really hits me is because I always say, what have we not discovered?
Yeah.
Great. I mean, and if we keep thinking that way, oftentimes you walk into organizations and they're really efficient in operations. I mean, they're trucking along. 90% of their time is operational excellence, right? The innovation happens when I can free up their time to actually innovate, to actually ideate. And I mean, if you've got all of these processes running and all of these things happening and you're efficient and you're 90% operations, the sweet spot is let's get that down to 60%. Let's utilize orchestration, automation. What can we do on the back end from a business process perspective to free up your time so you can innovate, so you can solve those real world problems? And I think that that's the differentiating factor is, and I laugh all the time because I use the, there's nothing sexy about operations. It works. You know, the lights, when they come on, they work. And everyone's like, yay. No one celebrates that. It's when they don't work that you hear about it, right?
True. Well,
why do we want to commoditize IT, right? And make it that way for, so stepping forward into this uncomfortable space of change leadership and change management in an org, and how UTSA has a lot of these thought leaders setting the pace, but we still have a culture in the organization that isn't used to this. So things can run flat very quick, right? And so I came in, called it a digital transformation journey. And I said, it's going to take us 5 years to get there. And I'm going to be a realist about it. We're going to hit a few back steps, you know, back, and then we're going to go forward one, and then we maybe go back 20. But what we learn during this process is invaluable. Yeah. The discovery and the learning and the engagement of that process is invaluable. So I do feel as and being in this university in this really climate of change, it is the leader's responsibility to bring everyone across the finish line, right? To have everyone working towards the common themes and goals. And so the very first thing I wanted to do is create a strategic plan for our division that aligned and had activities and capabilities that aligned to Taylor's vision of what he thought we were where we were headed. And so we put these themes out and we did some alignment to those themes, but it's more than just checking boxes. Oh, that's done. Oh, let's move on to the next, right? It's more than that. I call it every day. It takes this resilience, this tenacity, and some of these, you know, galvanizing, like all of these things that you have to be able to do as a leader so that you get to that end goal of transformation, because it's really the business that transforms. IT just enables it. Right.
Can you talk to that transformation initiative in terms of like what were you able to make happen for the business? What did you directly benefit? What value did they see, whether it was research, academic, or other?
It was immediate, because I love to tell this story because it's I got handed a report. Great big company came in here. Everyone knows their names. They came in, they did this assessment, and they're like, here's this report and all the things that are broken. And when I arrived, that report was already a year old.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, it didn't get better in a year. It actually probably got worse, right? So the first thing I did was I did what I call it a 30, 60, 90 listening tour. And I find out these areas and then I compare it to the feedback I received in this report. And the first thing I created was a dashboard. We needed governance. We needed to govern our portfolio. We needed to govern our capacity to do great, big, huge initiatives. And we needed to be able to see what we were doing and if we were doing the right work at the right time. And when I started lifting up the little rocks and we started going in and kind of, I started setting pace. I'm new. And now I'm leading this entire group. I did a series of town hall talks. I would bring them in. And the interesting piece of all of this is I joined the organization and literally a year and 1 month later, the pandemic hit. So just as we started picking up our momentum on what truly it would take to transform, which by the way, is the business, and IT is going to enable it, we found efficiencies in processes that were just being done because, well, that's the way we've always done it, right? And so we had to have crucial conversations, really hone in and have discussions around that right work. What does that look like? Well, we don't have a portfolio. Where's the what is our services? What do we do well? What do we do really badly? And I leaned into the transformational. And that, and the reason I bring that up is because 9 times out of 10, they give you this great quadrant and you're either up here in this quadrant, you know, and this is for quick wins and, you know, transformational programs. And this is long-term. Well, I realized if I honed in on the transformational things that we needed to do, that it would actually solve the other clear winners and so forth. So I did, and I created a dashboard for Taylor, and we sprinted for a year to, I mean, I had to get out of the outage business. Every time our students registered, we had an outage. Imagine being a student with all of the options that we have, and they can't even register for courses. And so it was really a hone in and look at what we were doing and how we could do it better. And I think learning as I went through that, because you never want to go into an org as a leader and be, you know, tell them they have an ugly baby, right? You know, it's that whole, ugly, you know, you guys have heard that, right? The ugly yep. baby's but what you can do is say, we now have the ability and support from our cabinet to support us to get there. And then when they started seeing they're not a commodity, they were coming out of the woodworks. I started seeing leaders just pop up out of the org. And I want to go back to autonomy in their roles and the importance of the work they're doing. Tie them together. I think that's important. And Dom, the reason I say that is because when you asked that question, it immediately reminded me. I had a group of engineers before at one of my previous stops, and they were very disenchanted. They didn't really understand the importance of a virtual desktop infrastructure and what it would do for the students. This organization was in a very poor socioeconomic part of Fort Worth, Texas. And I said, I've got to figure this out. And this is the people side of it. I mean, you can't transform without the people. So I honed in on these students, and I went to this one particular group, and I created this group of students, and I brought them in, and I set them in front of all of the engineering team. And I said, these guys are going to tell their story. And this one particular student, Dominic was his name. And he said, he said to me, you know, I've been working 3 jobs while I go to school. I'm a first gen student, and I have to come to that lab every week to do my homework. It's the only one that has my software. But when you rolled out this new program, it allowed me to use my iPad. And so I went to my boss at the warehouse I work at, and I said to the boss, I would like to work weekends now. And if I can do my homework while I'm here, then I can sit at this desk and do this. And that, and they agreed. And he said, yeah, he said, and this was the kicker. He said, and I've been paying my mom's rent for the last, so she could quit one of her jobs, you know? And so to me, when you don't have that kind of adversity, and then you watch someone who does, I watched every one of those engineers go back to their, like, look, they were like, we've got to roll this out. We've got to get this done. We've got to get the comm plant. We've got to get all of this ironed out so that students can benefit, because it's bigger than me. It's bigger than you. It's bigger than you. And so once that happened, the transformational journey was easy. It just took, a lot of intentional leadership.
Oh, wow.
So a little bit outside of the university again, but like, we did some research. We saw something with the Smart San Antonio initiative. Can you tell us a little bit about that? It sounds like there's a Smart SA sandbox, but great to learn more about what that initiative is and if UTSA.
Yeah, they're working really closely with our researchers and doing a lot of IoT research right now. We have an AI consortium, and the AI consortium is looking at how these you know, how AI can actually, you know, work to benefit a lot of the programs that they run and do. And so how can we, as the research entity, provide them with those sandboxes to do that work in? You know, IP is huge right now in higher ed, and protecting IP is even more critical. And so just being to create an ecosystem where they can all get together and share these ideas, we don't know. That's my whole point when I say reduce the time to science. We don't know what they could create out of this. You know, what's the next big thing that could come from this? But if we don't expend the energy to actually create these areas of it should be completely, you know, free to share ideas. And it shouldn't just be domain specific. Oh, well, you know, that's mathematics or that's the, no, pull all of them interdisciplinary together. And what does that look like? Because the things we're doing here with AI could actually do something in psychology or the arts. And I think that, you know, when they rolled out this data sharing agreement, that was the precipitous of some of this IoT work that they're going to start solving. So if San Antonio is, you know, in the 20th percentile for pedestrian road deaths, we should be able to solve that problem.
Wow.
With this research.
That's incredible. Yeah, I just absolutely love, you know, the story, you know, the leadership that you really bring to the table, and in kind of empowering and inspiring your people to understand that it's more than tech. There's stories, there's people's lives behind us, right? And that's kind of the leadership that you're really helping to bring and helping to drive, you know, those digital transformation efforts. So it's been incredible. So, you know, let's shift to some, you know, kind of specific efforts.
Some research found, you know, the Center for Smart and Connected Health Technologies at UT Health San Antonio. Can you tell us about that initiative and maybe any results that it's achieved?
So UT Health San Antonio has this going on with the city. And some of the things that we're trying to do is do small clinics and shift some of that workload. But as far as integrating systems to be able to do that, that is where we come out of the woodwork to say, okay, they may be using this. We can help them with this. We, you know, create the integration point and then give them that meeting space in the middle. But that was one of the ones I marked on your sheet, you know, as far as having the depth there, as far as what they're doing. But I think the biggest piece is even the clinical side, like from a psychology perspective, what can we do to help and give those psychology resources to our students, creating the clinics and so forth. So that we did a quick group together with them. Even when COVID came out and we started doing the vaccination requirements, we leaned into that relationship with UT Health to actually get to that database in this at the state level so that we could then make it easier for our students to be able to share that information with their locals there on campus, right? Wow. Just so we can move students back. But I do feel that, you know, there's a lot of partnership opportunities there, and large research health science research entities are where it's at. We can lean into their expertise in the research space to be able to elevate ours.
That's great. So you alluded earlier to, you know, San Antonio or UTSA having a huge cyber influence. And I think you even might have mentioned that, or I saw somewhere that it's getting, San Antonio's getting the nickname of Cyber City USA. Tell us a little about how that's happening, and make sure you reference CyManny and the National Security Collaboration Center. I think these
Absolutely.
Are some great initiatives to highlight.
Absolutely. So San Antonio is, you know, we've got Joint Base San Antonio here. It's a large military operation, and a lot of research they're doing in 5G is beneficial, and we can actually help them with that research so that they can make and secure all of our bases across the U.S., right? And so I think that was one of the biggest things I started seeing when I got here. The National Security Collaboration Center is just taking that next level, right? Guy Walsh, he's retired Brigadier General Guy Walsh. He, you know, ran Cyber Command. And so we've got these great experiential people here that have the wealth of knowledge. The partnership with the NSA and the things that we do there are beneficial because the research that come out of that, they share cyber ranges. They share that data. And then the best part about that is our students get that experience in the classroom. We've got the number one cyber, you know, undergrad program in the U.S., and we are really putting them through and delivering cyber professionals. And I want to see them stay in San Antonio. So the Port of San Antonio has a great cyber range. They built a great big SOC over there. It's beautiful. And how can we get our students to start feeding? And if we create a program that, you know, they get the experience here. I have an internship program, and it's called the Ambassador Program. And we take our cyber students through our SOC, because we have a SOC as well, a Security Operations Center. And they get this experience in the, and then they leave and they go out and they're like, oh, now we can do this. We actually use the same tools that you're using to do this in our SOC. So the monitoring, the control. And so I think it's those partnerships. And during my tenure, since I've been here, I've only been here 3 years, we worked really closely because the Department of Energy was rolling out the cyber manufacturing. You all know what happened a couple of years ago when chipsets, parts, things were getting shipped, and we basically had a supply chain hack. So the Cyber Manufacturing Institute, CyManny, is created locally here. I serve on their board with them and work with them for technology solutions. But that group is specifically created and designed and funded by the Department of Energy to prevent the next supply chain hack.
Wow.
That's huge.
Yeah,
that's cool. I mean, it's huge. And that means you need to know a little bit about the bits and the bytes, and you need to have a really good foundation in cybersecurity. It's exciting. I want to get to the point where my researchers don't even have to think about cyber. If I can throw out CMMC for them and say I can attest that the networks and technologies that you're using are secure and safe, they may get awarded more NSF funding.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we can do more. And so I really feel it's important. And I will say it really keeps me on my toes, because usually the people at the top don't know when something cyber is happening. And so you got to be in the weeds. And it's exciting to see our leadership here support what the initiatives that we're doing. I mean, we started doing full on knowledge campaigns. I mean, phishing is huge, and that's just operationally. But imagine trying to be a higher ed institution that has the best program in this, the best faculty in this, but doesn't practice it, right? And so we practice it, and it's exciting. And I've seen our graduates walk out and walk straight into SOCs and get jobs that are very well paying. And I feel like we're part of their trajectory. You know, we enabled that technology and the use of it when they were on our campus. And so it's very critical and important work, and you can never be too secure.
That's awesome. And maybe, can I just double click on that real quick? Because I know a lot of our listeners would love, I mean, what you've just kind of articulated is just phenomenal. Can you talk a little bit about how you've led up, how you've gotten kind of that buy-in from, you know, the executive leadership? Because, you know, a lot of times we hear, I'm IT, I'm stuck, you know, in the background, or I don't even have a seat at the table. And I know a lot of our, you know, leaders in that space would love to hear. How did you lead up? How did you really get that kind of executive buy-in?
Well, I will say the first thing I did was I actually bought the book called Seat at the Table. It's actually the name of the book. And because in that book, it gives you tangible things. I had to take the bits and the bytes out of the conversation. Like, I couldn't go in there and do all kinds of techno babble. I mean, we have more abbreviations. And it was funny, my president actually told me one time, he's like, y'all have more abbreviations than doctors. And I'm like, I know, it's IT. But what my goal is, and my role is I'm supposed to translate that for them.
Yep.
In terms like risk, exposure, outcomes, right? And I think that was the differentiator, was that my president cares about cybersecurity. That connective tissue to JBL and providing research and oversight and help, and NSA coming in and saying, hey, look, we want to partner with the Cybersecurity Collaboration Center. We do red team exercises. And Taylor seeing the significance of what our students can leave here with understands the importance of a cyber event. And so things like malware, you know, you hear it all the time. As a matter of fact, when I first arrived here, several entities in Texas had gotten exposed with ransomware. And so, and when presidents hear this, they immediately want to know, oh my gosh, this is scary. What would happen if it happened to us? So very first on, Taylor and I, we grabbed hands and said, this is our strategy for us to ensure we're educated. We run phishing simulation tests. We've got people afraid to even click on real links. It's so funny. I mean, it's like, we don't want to get too far, right? You know, but it works in a way that we're communicating and sharing with them real processes that can help them, and not just, you know, in a back office somewhere, like back office IT. Oh, everyone's scanning. Let's put it in the, I give Taylor a cybersecurity awareness report every month. My CISO goes through, looks at, gets statistics. We blocked 190,000 of this. We did. And once we started biting that off in the language that the executives needed to speak in, and that's, I reference that book, Seat at the Table, it allowed them to understand the significance of our data. Our data is our money, and we got to do everything we can to protect it. And then, you know, what about your image? What about your marketing and your branding? Our brand as the number one undergrad cyber program, and, you know, number two in grad, that can be tainted very quickly if we go through a cyber event. So you can imagine my spidey senses when I first arrived here, I was like, okay, we have to operate this way. And if we don't, our weak spot will be someone's strong spot. Does that make sense?
Totally. Also, it's great to hear the reference to Mark Schwartz in the Seat of the Table. He was a guest on the podcast about a year ago, just FYI.
Oh, yeah. He's fantastic. I love his books. I have both of them. But yeah, Seat at the Table was the one that really honed in for me.
Great. Well, we have a couple of standard questions as we kind of wrap up to a close. What can we do to help you do more? Maybe it's someone listening to your response or some connection we can make. Tell us what's on your mind with that.
I want to see educational opportunities for all, right? I want to see that one person who thought, well, I can't do this. I'm first gen, my family, I don't have the funding. I can't, for opportunities to close those gaps and share with them. And then I'll also mention, and this is important, I'm a woman in this seat, okay? And being a woman in this seat means I have a very large role and responsibility to ensure I communicate to other women and young girls and 6th through 10th grade so they know, go to the sciences, go to STEM, look at these things. You can as well do this, right? And so I think that would be, you know, getting that out there, getting our message out there. And talking about it in a way that excites and inspires them. I think, at the end of the day, it all comes down to, I didn't know it now, but once I learned, what else can I learn? What else? And being hungry. I always go back to hungry, humble, and kind. And so bringing students in, finding opportunities. Like, I would love to see some of our media students be able to come on your podcast sometime and like, hey, this is how a podcast is ran. This is really cool. And how do we do that if we want to actually go out and create our own, you know, that entrepreneurial mindset. So I think those are the ways that, you know, you can bridge that gap. And that's why I do these things, is because I want other, you know, students to know you don't have to be a traditional student to make that success. You know, you don't have to, you know, it does. There's no sticky tape that says that only this is going to do this, right? And so I'm first gen as myself. And so I think it's important to always lean into that, because that's where we're going to transform and change society.
If they were listening, they'd definitely see a natural. You definitely are comfortable with telling the story. This is great. Our last question is, as you've gotten to know us on the podcast and just knowing your own background, I'm sure you haven't been able to do this yourself. Is there anyone that you're particularly appreciative of you want to call out and let us know if you think they'd be a great guest on the podcast? We'd love to.
I definitely want to call out someone, actually a couple of folks. We all have mentors, and if you don't, and you're out there listening, get you five, right? Don't just settle for one, get you five. But I really listen, and I'm coachable in that, in trying new things. I don't have an ego. And so I think that what I'd love to see is Barbara Cooper. I don't know if you have ever met Barbara Cooper.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. She's actually a mentor of mine here locally in Arizona. That's amazing. I love Barbara.
Former
CIO Global of Toyota. Yeah, no, it's a small world. I'll have to let her know. This is great.
You gotta let her know. Her and I have been together for about almost 3 years now, going into our fourth. And I mean, I am able to just ask any pointed question, and she can help navigate me through that.
What's stunning, sorry to give people some context real quick. Barbara's like about a 5'11 blonde woman. And think she was going to the board meetings of Japan's Toyota globally as an IT leader. So she just has an amazing presence. So sorry to cut
you
off.
You listen, and when she speaks, you take it, and you know she means business. And so, yes, I would be so neat to see that context of what I've seen through my lens in innovation. That would be phenomenal. And then I work really closely with Frank Fegans from Dallas, University of Texas, Dallas. And Frank has got a heavy research background. And he came in from corporate America into higher ed and has just excelled. I believe Frank might have actually been in Arizona at one time. He's really, really good. He is a change agent as well. And so whenever I have changes, I often will ping my counterpart and be like, okay, this didn't fly in Dallas. Will it fly here? So it's kind of a litmus test, if you will. But yeah, So great leaders alike. And I enjoy being able to lean in and ask them questions that perhaps I just needed a quick, what would you do? You know, or have you seen this? Or, hey, were you able to innovate with this? And, you know, saving that breath of trying to do all of this research. Now, it doesn't mean you don't get to do the research, right? You still got to do that. So
that Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Kendra Ketchum, Vice President for Information Management and Technology at the University of Texas, San Antonio. Thanks for joining us. It's great and great.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Fantastic, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Support for this episode of the Urban Complex comes from MST.
MST is a Salesforce certified integrator. We work on building customer experience solutions and deploy them for our customers. As we started evolving, our why also continued to evolve as a company. Over the last 3 years, the whole approach was really revolving around what we call 3 C's, which is customers, colleagues, and community.
Okay, Dom, that was Kendra. What'd you think?
Yeah, awesome. I mean, what a great example and story of leadership, right? I mean, she really inspired me just listening to that conversation. But I think, you know, a couple of main things that I want to highlight here. And, you know, I love the way from the university's perspective, you know, she really sees her role in the smart city space as leaning in, right? And doing what she can to really help drive collaboration across sectors. Within the city of San Antonio, right? I mean, how many times did she say lean in and break down those silos, build up the partnerships, right? And so I love that idea because oftentimes it's difficult for the city to do it. It's difficult maybe for, you know, one private company to do it, but the university with its presence and its brand of innovation, its brand of research, it can really play that leadership role. But oftentimes, it chooses not to, right? It chooses to stay within the boundaries of its campus and not really proactively engage the cities and help drive that sort of collaboration that's needed to solve the challenges. And so it was so refreshing. And you can see the passion she has for it when she talks, to see that kind of leadership coming from the university. And because she was right. I mean, I think she mentioned, you know, ultimately all of these challenges, there's going to be some research needed to solve them, or they probably would have already been solved before. So I love that idea of, you know, the taking the mantle of leading and leaning into these sorts of smart city efforts and throwing the university and its research and its innovation weight around. I found that really amazing. And then maybe the other thing is just, you know, her understanding as well. She, you know, mentioned Mark and his book and having the seat at the table, but, you know, you have to, that takes a special kind of leader to understand how do I need to change my message to make it appealing or make it effective for those that might be above me. Right. And so she knew she can't speak what tech speak or how she called it, right. She had to really put it, the tech part of it, the bits and bytes, and put it in the language of the executive leadership. And I think that's where I see a lot of not only technology leaders, but also technology companies fail because we get in these situations and they talk tech, right? Instead of talking about the people, the process, talking about what matters to these decision makers, they want to talk bits and bytes and you end up losing people before you can even really solve anything challenging. So I really appreciated her candor about, hey, I know I'm in the tech space. I know I'm on the tech team, but I got to be able to communicate in business outcomes for my leadership, right? Risk, yeah. You know, and stuff like that.
Well, she mentioned just the president 4 or 5 times, meaning she has an intimate relationship in that collaboration. And I think that's important. By asking why a lot, she gets the context. She knows how to have a shared vision. She knows how to bring the technology in a way that's going to resonate. And my hunch gives the president talking points so they can represent technology too, so that it gets reinforced. That's really important. I also think the way, to your point about leaning in, she kept saying time to science, meaning if she can help the research organization or the parties outside of the university do what they need to do faster, remove cycles, automate, get things not operational, but actually time to innovate, that improves the time to science. I thought that was really, really important. And I think it reinforces what you were saying. That's really a big mantra of hers. And you can tell she walks the talk. She wants to engage. She wants to educate. She wants people with a culture of curiosity. They're going to keep learning all their lives. And here she is. She's 26 years in higher education doing that. So definitely knows what she's doing.
Yeah, it's incredible. I'm really excited to see where she takes UTSA. I mean, I think with her kind of leadership and that like pedigree that she talks about in cyber, I mean, it's...
Well, yeah, what a huge thing to build off of. I had no idea, wow. First of all, that San Antonio was the seventh largest city in the nation. I've also seen that San Antonio is one of the up-and-coming smart cities to watch. And if they have a cyber program, too, and then embed that with the partnership with UTSA, what a great partnership there.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I will have to keep her close so that way we can follow up with and see what she's doing a little bit down the road.
For sure.
Great. So should we pivot to cracks in the pavement? What do you have for us this week?
Let's do it. I see one, you know, as we're breaking hundreds here in Phoenix, it's definitely relative to us. It says citizen scientists help track urban heat in 14 U.S. communities. They're basically working with a couple organizations, including NOAA, National Organization of Oceanic, NOAA and city counties residents to look at heat. I know what they're doing is they're tracking heat changes over time. And one of the things they've seen, and I know Arizona has done quite well, especially downtown, is start to increase tree canopy to make sure it's not reflective off and absorbing into the concrete, plus giving citizens a place to walk. I know that's so critical there.
Yeah, I mean, what a tough challenge. It just seems like more and more cities, you know, are starting to face this urban heat issue. I mean, it was so important, I guess, to the city. You know, they hired, I think, maybe the first ever in the country professor from ASU to actually lead up almost, you know, an urban heat department within the city of Phoenix.
Exactly.
It was pretty remarkable to see that happen. But, I think it's just it's. We're going to see it more and more. I mean, temperatures continue to rise and you know, solutions are difficult to come by, right? You can plant trees, you can, you know, but what else might we be able to do through tech to really help, you know?
And the article is all about data. And one thing that I hadn't seen about heat studies is they're starting to monitor indoor temperatures to understand what people's expectations and experience are when they do leave their homes. I know people joke that, you know, in Arizona, we just kind of run from AC to AC, whether it's in our car or inside our homes, but still it's a major shock. And it'll be interesting to see how that experience changes based on people's inside environment too.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting article. We'll be sure to post it. And if anyone has any good, Urban Heat Island stories or solutions or, efforts, reach out, let us know. Maybe we'll have you on the show to talk about your story and make a podcast out of it.
Sounds good. Till next time. Thanks, everyone.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The Urban Complex, Smarter Cities for a Stronger Tomorrow. Please find us on where you listen, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. We do love your feedback. Let us know if you have ideas for guests or questions to air on Cracks in the Pavement via social media. The Urban Complex is found on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. Or just shoot me an email, chris@theurbancomplex.com. Till next time.